This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor, and I welcome Michael Vlahos Germanicus at the turn of the year, the Calends of January, the Calends of Janus, the god that we Romans worship as the opener of doors, the beginnings. This is the beginning of our calendar year, thanks to Julius Caesar, who in his short term as dictator rearranged the furniture, including the calendar. So we begin our year with measure of 2,000 years after Caesar's exit. We're living with the same tension, the same contrast, the same paradox that brought down Caesar but elevated his choice of son, Octavian, into being Augustus, the divine Augustus we sacrifice to him every night when Germanicus and I head to the games and the theater. Because Germanicus gave us stability until, of course, the troubled Caligula, the equally troubled Claudius, the extremely troubled Nero, and then the Flavians. And we're living with one of the Flavians, the last of them, because we can see into the future, Domitian. Now, Domitian is another example of what I asked Germanicus to help me with, because Domitian is popular with the mob, a.k.a. the populares. He's despised, hated, and will be eventually removed by the Senate, the optimates. That is a tension that we live with here in Londinium. Edge of the empire, we're far away, we're equestrian class, we're not rich enough to be senators, and who needs the trouble anyway? We're enjoying our cup of wine by the Thames in early winter of 91. It's now the beginning of 91 A.D., and I turn to Germanicus to philosophize about how 2,000 years from now, the American Empire, which is an exact copy of the Roman Empire, has not solved, does not seek to solve, is not obviously aware that it's living with the same tension that scarred and then rejuvenated our time, which is the optimates, the smart ones, the ones with degrees and money, the senators and their hangers-on. The optimates rule always. They have the chroniclers, they have the Roman Forum, the Rotunda, they command all of the attention of the historians, and yet they live in anxiety, even the word fear, of the populares, the mob, the Roman citizens and hangers-on in Rome, looking for advantages, being bribed at election time or the handout of grains. Thank you very much. All of that worries the optimates, who appear, from the populares' point of view, to have everything. They're rich, they're powerful, they're beautiful. They move around the planet easily. They command great fortunes, no matter whether they're in their own country or not. When they go to Paris, they're even celebrated. That's how powerful they are. And yet, Germanicus, a very good evening to you. It comes to me again, reviewing a book about Cato. Cato is the philosopher of the optimates. Some would say the rhetorician of the optimates. Some would say the stooge of the optimates. But Cato was celebrated by George Washington, the father of this country, and is still celebrated as a man of extreme piety and integrity, pressing the optimates case. I think in Hoover's terms, optimates would be called experts. And Cato always went to the experts. He believed in transparency. He was against bribing, though he participated in bribing. He was against corrupting the vote, though he participated in corrupting the vote. But as long as the optimates won, it was acceptable to him. Here we are, 2,000 years after Rome, and we're living with the same tension. So my question to you is, why are the optimates not self-aware of their limitations, that we, the populares, always win, and that here in the late Republic of the American Empire, just as the late Republic of the Roman Empire, we witness that the strong men are the resolution of the tension. There was always going to be an Octavian. There was always going to be a strong man like Caesar, there was always going to be a strong man like Bonaparte. There was always going to be a strong man. Oh, name them. Kaiser, they have many names. Their names are legion. Why is it that the optimates do not see that. Why is it that they spend their time disdaining the populares, treating them as boobs, as ignorant people, as uneducated people? Why does that continue 2,000 years later? Thank you, Germanicus. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. The questions you ask, especially pertaining to the obtuseness, the blindness, ostrich-like behavior of the elites, to the need for the people to bond with a leader, can all be, in a sense, contained, even answered in the experience of the Roman Republic, which, you know, as you know, began, as we all know, in 509 BC, lasted to about 31 BC, the Battle of Actium. And in that period, a little less than 500 years, was marked almost completely by an intense struggle between an elite and the people within the constitutional construct of the Republic itself. And at first, that struggle was between patricians and plebeians. Then it shifted with the triumph of the plebeians into a struggle between the optimates and the populares, as the rich plebeians became the new aristocracy, replacing to a large degree the old patricians. And you had a struggle ensue as Rome expanded beyond its city-state, not just into Latium, but throughout Italy and then throughout the Mediterranean world. The optimates, the elites, became immensely wealthy, and they began to seek an order which was seen in foreign lands as a imperial colonizing order. But they also became stratified in the politics, which had allowed the voice of the people, the populares, to be heard, began to freeze them out. The people's allegiance was not only taken for granted, but they were used cynically as cannon fodder. I mean, we could go on and on here, but what's interesting is in this process, what you see in America today, just as you saw in the latter days of the Roman Republic, is elites begin to reach a point where not only are they on top, but they will do everything in their policies to maximize their wealth and status. Real social mobility declines, as we see here in the U.S., just as in Rome. Any kind of change is resisted. I mean, here in America, we talk about innovation, but we're not an innovative economy. We're a frozen economy. Elites ignore threats to the people's way of life. Indeed, this was true in the later Republic. Men were being taken as their obligation to defend the Republic away for foreign wars. They couldn't tend their farms. They became impoverished. And they became impoverished because of the acquisitive imperial campaigns of optimates, who were raking in all of the plunder of the East. And so what happens when the people got very restive is you began to get individual optimates who were very opportunistic, starting with Marius, then Sulla, then finally you get into the world of Caesar and the triumvirates.
Pompey and Crassus and Caesar and Cicero, Cicero hanging around in the edges picking up villas. Yes, Pompey and Crassus and Caesar, all three optimates who knew their main chance, and they went for it.
Okay, so what you understand, though, is here are these sort of billionaire types. The people are flocking to them because they see the policies and the approaches that have impoverished them. They look to a leader among the optimates to save them, and the elites, like Cicero, then later on, the cabal of Brutus and Cassius and others who got together to murder Caesar and to try and not reinstate the Republic, but reinstate this elitist, almost blue oligopoly. And what that represents in America today is what we see at the end of the Roman Republic, which is that elite authority is aggressively militarized. And so what is happening today is that the elite is seeking to find ways to legally keep the populares underfoot. And that only makes the populares only more desperate to hook up with a leader who will not only listen to them, but overthrow the ruling elites and so save the people. And this is exactly what you see in the period of the first century. You know, the Roman Republic always had its stresses and strains. But if you look at the third century, there were, in terms of rebellions or civil wars, there were only two, and they weren't civil wars even. In the second century, you didn't even then have an actual civil war, but you had three revolts. In the first century, you had a score of revolts, and 15 of them were civil wars. It got to the point where you could not have a constitutional succession in the Roman Republic without a civil war. And that is where we're coming to in the United States today.
The anxiety, Germanicus. We know that the optimates have this anxiety. From where does it come? What are they? They've got everything. Why do they insist upon persecuting the mob? The January 6th mob, completely disorganized, fantastic imaginations, but hardly a threat to order. Or the invention in 2016 of the Russian interference in taking over the candidate. Where does this anxiety come from? Is it in their schooling?
Well, they have a deep, almost primordial understanding of the people as being against them, but it's a sensation. And because they've defined the people as Hillary Clinton did, as a basket of deplorables, or as President Obama did, as people who cling to their guns and religion. And then full circle, it has come now where the current American president refers to them as fascists. What has happened is that in order to deal with the incredible cognitive dissonance of an elite that was for so long committed to helping the common man suddenly become committed to oppressing them, is to create a misdirection that they visit upon themselves. It's like a misdirection in a magic trick. It allows them to not see what's actually going on and instead see something else as the basis for the action that is completed. So essentially what the elite does today is it creates a projection called, or which I call the Church of Woke, which is to say that these are heretical people who are not of the body, who are apostates or degenerates or oppressors, and they need to be brought to heel. So that then creates a new reality framework in which the oppression of the people by the elites is not only correct, but necessary, not only to prove their virtue, but to create a virtuous republic in which their democracy rules. And as for those downtrodden populares, who in the past have been so supportive of the blue elite, they are changed into magically into kind of oppressed children who need to be rewarded and need to be made more dependent. And so what this does is it creates a fantasy ideology in which, in the minds of the optimates in America today, they're helping the virtuous downtrodden, which they continue to trot upon, and the evil downtrodden, who actually aren't downtrodden, but they are fascist terrorists and somehow the privileged, who must be sanitized. And so as a result, you have a framework that manages to divide the populares against each other, and at the same time to allow the optimates to maintain control while fully emotionally content in being the true and just cause. And this has its antecedents, obviously, in the medieval world, but it is a remarkable construct. And the truth is that it is a construct of intense, brittle fragility. It can be shattered at any time because it so contorts and distorts the actual nature of reality that it is not essentially sustainable.
Will they recognize the strong man when he comes? Will they see that this is their worst nightmare?
They saw a strong man in Mr. Trump, and he was a strong man, but he was also a weak man, and he was no Caesar, no Napoleon, no Hitler. He was
as a foreshadowing of.
But they saw him and wished to make him a perfect model tyrant, and in doing so, they sort of laid down a marker that they will oppose any popular leader who can connect to the broad mass of Americans, no matter what his or her views or vision is. That person will be a fascist and an insurrectionist. And so what they're doing, paradoxically, is they're setting themselves up for the appearance and the ultimate triumph of just such a figure. They're making sure that figure will emerge and will be triumphant.
Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. I am Gaius John Batchelor. We're by the Thames. We're enjoying ourselves philosophizing. We can see 2,000 years into the future, and yet it doesn't lift our hearts to hear that the same struggles we've been through in the first century are not going to be solved, not even... There won't even be self-awareness. The populares, the mob, will win. The mob will choose a strong man, and that will be the end of the republic, if it already isn't the end of the republic. It's not. I'm not judging. I'm just saying that this is a ceremony that has been built upon the Roman inability to solve our own problems. We had a Caesar who had very good ideas and was busy. In fact, he was on his way to conquer the one threat we had in the East. However, he was struck down by Brutus and his colleagues because he was a strong man. And apparently, we're going to go through the same exercise. We're going to turn to something specific next, because part of the empire that we've inherited from Rome is perpetual war. And the perpetual war in Europe is beginning, no, it already has looked very dangerous. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.